Minx. Page 128. She would make a handy waiting maid for my daughter by and by, but if she stayed here with her white face, I suppose I should either kill her or spoil her. I hope the doctor will sell them as far as wind and water can carry them. As for their mother, her ladyship will find out yet what she gets by running away. She hasn't so much feeling for her children as a cow has for its calf. If she had, she would have come back long ago to get them out of jail and save all this expense and trouble. The good-for-nothing hussy! When she is caught, she shall stay in jail in irons for 1 6 months, and then be sold to a sugar plantation. I shall see her broke in yet. What do you stand there for, Bill? Why don't you go off with the little brat? Mind now that you don't let any of the niggers speak to her in the street. When these remarks were reported to me, I smiled at Mrs. Flint, saying that she should either kill my child or spoil her. I thought to myself there was very little danger of the latter. I have always considered it as one of God's special providences that Ellen screamed till she was carried back to jail. That same night, Dr. Flint was called to a patient and did not return till near morning. Passing my grandmother's, he saw a light in the house and thought to himself, "Perhaps this has something to do with Linda." He knocked, and the door was opened. "What calls you up so early?" he said. "I saw your light on, and I thought I would just stop and tell you that I have found out where Linda is. I know where to put my hands on her, and I shall have her before 12 o'clock." Then he turned away. My grandmother and my uncle looked anxiously at each other. They did not know whether or not it was merely one of the doctor's tricks to frighten them. In their uncertainty, they thought it was best to have a message conveyed to my friend Betty. Unwilling to alarm her mistress, Betty resolved to dispose of me herself. She came to me and told me to rise and dress quickly. We hurried downstairs and across the yard into the kitchen. She locked the door and lifted up a plank in the floor. A buffalo skin and a bit of carpet were spread for me to lie on, and a quilt thrown over me. Page 129. "Stay there," said she, "till I sees if they know about you. They say they will put their hands on you for 12 o'clock. If they did know where you were, they don't know now. They'll be disappointed this time. That's all I got to say. If they comes a-running among my things, they'll get one blessed sarsen from this here nigger." In my shallow bed, I had just room enough to bring my hands to my face to keep the dust out of my eyes, for Betty walked over me 20 times in an hour, passing from the dresser to the fireplace. When she was alone, I could hear her pronouncing anathemas over Dr. Flint and all his tribe every now and then, saying with a chuckling laugh, "This nigger's too cute for them this time." When the housemaids were about, she had sly ways of drawing them out that I might hear what they would say. She would repeat stories she had heard about my being in this or that or the other place, to which they would answer that I was not fool enough to be staying round there, that I was in Philadelphia or New York before this time. When all were abed and asleep, Betty raised the plank and said, "Come out, child, come out. They don't know nothing about you. 'Twas only white folks' lies to scare these niggers." Some days after this adventure, I had a much worse fright. As I sat very still in my retreat above the stairs, cheerful visions floated through my mind. I thought Dr. Flint would soon get discouraged and would be willing to sell my children when he lost all hopes of making them the means of my discovery. I knew who was ready to buy them. Suddenly I heard a voice that chilled my blood. The sound was too familiar to me. It had been too dreadful for me not to recognize at once my old master. He was in the house, and I at once concluded he had come to seize me. I looked around in terror. There was no way of escape. The voice receded. I supposed the constable was with him, and they were searching the house. In my alarm, I did not forget the trouble I was bringing on my generous benefactress. It seemed as if I were born to bring sorrow on all who befriended me, and that was the bitterest drop in the bitter cup of my life. After a while, I heard approaching footsteps. The key was turned in my door. I braced myself against the wall to keep from falling. I ventured to look up, and there stood my kind benefactress, alone. I was too much overcome to speak, and sunk down upon the floor. Page 130. "I thought you would hear your master's voice," she said, "and knowing you would be terrified, I came to tell you there is nothing to fear. You may even indulge in a laugh at the old gentleman's expense. He is so sure you are in New York that he came to borrow $500 to go in pursuit of you. My sister had some money to loan on interest. He has obtained it, and proposes to start for New York tonight. So, for the present, you see you are safe. The doctor will merely lighten his pocket hunting after the bird he has left behind."